Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. Well, there's a few shows left before we go on a hiatus, unless we hear from you. Hi, I'm Hirsch Delin, your host, and you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. Yes, we need to hear from you now. If you want the JE to remain on the air, you must show your support by pledging at least $18 or more at jewishexperience@verizon.net. We always hear from folks how much they enjoy and look forward to the program each week. And frankly, they haven't backed it up with ads or donations. This will be our last month for a while unless we hear from you now. And the parsha this week is Emor, and here we deal with the laws handed down to the Kohanim, the priests. They can't defile themselves with a dead body. They're restricted to who they may marry. A Kohen with a physical deformity cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, just like a deformed animal cannot be offered as a sacrifice. Then the second part of the parsha deals with all the holidays that the Jews are called to celebrate. First and foremost is the Sabbath. You know, I find it always amazing that people will keep their businesses open on the Sabbath and then close them for Rosh Hashanah or Passover or Yom Kippur. Shabbos is the most important of all of them, and there are seven people called up to the Torah. On other holidays, only five are called, and even on Yom Kippur, only six are called. Well, then the holiday of Passover is taught, which occurs with the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, and then the holiday itself coming on the 15th of Nisan, along with the daily Omer offerings, that's what we're counting the Omer, till the holiday of Shavuot on the 6th of Sivan, which we are coming up to next. Then Sukkot is described on the 15th of Tishrei, and finally, the 8th day of Sukkot is actually another separate holiday of Shmini Atzeres, the 8th day of assembly, and that's the day we finish the annual Torah cycle and celebrate Simchas Torah, the joy of the Torah. Next, the parsha talks about the temple itself, describes the menorah and the showbread, placed weekly on the shulchan, the table. And the parsha ends by talking about the penalties for murder and blasphemy. And speaking of talking, the staff of the JE is ready to talk to you with only the best in Shabbos preparation programming. With Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Moshe Bakar, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Ms. Devorah Delin, and Dr. Michael Shulman, with Liba Delin doing the Mazel Tov this week. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in southwestern Pennsylvania. Our special guest this week is the president of the ZOA Pittsburgh District, Deborah Feindel, who, with the 60th anniversary of Israel, will talk about where Israel is now and where it has to go in the future. And ask some interesting questions, so you want to stay right where you are. Of course, we'll have your community announcements and Mazel Tovs, along with current news, fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up in the half hour. Don't forget, you can always find us on the web at jewishexperienceradio.com. Don't forget to sponsor your favorite segment, or honor a simcha, or remember a yahrzeit. Don't forget, your help does keep the JE on the air for you. We've got to have the community support to remain on the air. And if you like what you hear, please donate today and ask your friends to do the same. If we find the community cannot support the program, we'll be forced to suspend our broadcasts until adequate support can be found. Don't wait. Donate today at jewishexperience@verizon.net. As always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, and Artistic Photography. Don't forget, candlelighting time tonight, 8:06 p.m. And coming up next is your and my favorite, some more a cappella just for you right here on the JE.
Sit in the morning sun, look at what has been done. A spinning wheel in my hands, too late when we see the evil plans. Eyes inspect all who look strange. Is that man tired or is he deranged? Travelers rely on me to get from point A to B. This is my home, this is my motherland. This is the place where I want to be, a home no one can take away from me. This is my home, this is my motherland, this is the land of truth. is paved with gold. This is the land of which my father sold. This is my home. Here in my hospital bed, wonder why it was not me instead. Who knows who'll drop and who'll fall? Where's that voice that's supposed to call? It seems the sacred guest has laid. How best to digest what's on our plate? There's a reason that we might not know. For a day on that way to go. This is my home. This is my motherland. This is the land that keeps us alive. This is the land for which my people stop. This is my home. This is my motherland. The place where I want to be, a home no one can take away from me. This is my home.
An insight on this week's Parsha is our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
The Parsha this Shabbos is Parshas Emor. In Parshas Emor, we read, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not remove completely the corners of your field, and you shall not gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and less fortunate." In this Pasuk, we speak about the all-important mitzvahs that a landowner must fulfill regarding his field. In this way, the poor will not be left unattended. The pasuk ends off, "Tazov osom, you shall leave them for the poor." Rashi explains this to mean that you should leave the poor by themselves in the field, and they will gather it. You shall not help them. This comment of Rashi seems very perplexing. Why can't the landowner help the poor man? He could further do kindness with the poor man by helping the poor man to gather the food. Why is it forbidden to help them? The Torah, however, understands the thoughts of man. The poor person may be made to feel inferior while collecting his food under the watchful eye of the landowner, and might feel that the landowner is assisting not so much out of his mercy, but rather so that he can keep an eye on things. This type of help the Torah considers forbidden. When helping others, not only do we have to be concerned with providing for their physical sustenance, but we also have to be encouraging and ever mindful of their self-respect. Rabbi Yehuda taught, "How fortunate is a person when a poor man comes to him. because that poor person is a gift sent from the Holy One, blessed be He. Fortunate is he who welcomes this gift with a joyous, smiling countenance. Behold, he who has mercy on the poor and helps the pauper to restore himself. God himself considers it as if his act created the pauper. In other words, when a poor man comes to our door, he is really doing us a great favor. He is helping us to a much, much greater extent than we are helping him. The holy words of the Zohar give new meaning to these verses from the book of Psalms. King David says, I will thank God exceedingly with my mouth, and amid the multitude I will praise him. For he stands at the right of the destitute to save him from those who wish to condemn his soul. King David realized that when a poor man appeared at his door, he did not appear by chance. Rather, it was God himself who stood beside this pauper and guided him to his door to give him the privilege of helping this poor man. As we mentioned last week, we have begun the study of Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of the Fathers. This is in preparation of the holiday of Shavuos, when we will receive the Torah. In Pirkei Avos it says that the poor should be considered like the members of our household. What does this mean? We could explain it in the following way. If we are sitting down to eat supper and a poor man knocks on the door, we think to ourselves, yes, we would like to invite him, but we have not prepared for him. We do not have enough food. What if we were sitting down to eat our dinner and one of our children unexpectedly came to our house? Would we also think that we do not have enough food for him, that we have not prepared for him? Certainly not. This is the meaning, that the poor should be considered like the members of our own household. Any kindness that we extend to our own family members should be extended to the poor as well.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort, And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600. Now it's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
The Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen Kagan, was universally accepted by Hasidim, Misnagdim, Jew, and non-Jew. His influence was enormous, for everyone realized his utter integrity. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said regarding the young Chafetz Chaim, Hashem has prepared a leader for the next generation. In 1873, at the age of 35, Rabbi Yisrael Meir published his classic Chafetz Chaim on the laws of Lashon Hara, evil gossip. This trailblazing work took a subject of utmost importance that was scattered throughout the Talmud and its commentaries and presented it in a systematic, scholarly, yet thoroughly understandable way, thereby making it accessible to all Jews. In 1907, after 25 years of preparation, Rabbi Yisrael Meir published the comprehensive commentary Mishnah Brura on Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim, the section dealing with daily and seasonal laws, explaining their application in present-day situations. When the Sefer appeared, the great Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik said regarding its author, "His greatness as a tzaddik obscures his even greater status as a Torah genius. Mishnah Brura has become part of virtually every Jewish home library." The Chafetz Chaim also wrote many other books, such as A Guide for Jewish Soldiers, laws regarding mitzvos that show concern for one's fellow Jews, such as granting loans, and an abridgment in the style of the Rif, Rabbi Alfasi, on the laws of sacrifices. All these were written in an easy-to-follow style. The Chafetz Chaim's saintliness was legendary. He dressed in simple clothing, wearing the ordinary hat and boots of working people. His furniture, too, was simple and poor. In his large, bare rooms stood long tables and benches. There he studied, ate, and received guests. Once, a rich man came to his home and was taken aback by its stark plainness. He asked the Chafetz Chaim, "Where is the rabbi's furniture?" "And where is your furniture?" replied the Chafetz Chaim. "But I am only passing through here," said the rich man. "I too," said Rabbi Yisrael Meir, "am just passing through." On a Friday afternoon at candlelighting time, Rabbi Yisrael Meir was seen running through the streets trying to locate and pay a worker who had left the print shop early in order to fulfill the mitzvah of paying an employee's wages on the day of his job. Dorothy Thompson, the celebrated American journalist, wanted to interview the Chafetz Chaim. When told that this was impossible, she begged to at least see him. Peering through the window of the Chafetz Chaim's house for 15 minutes and watching him study Torah, she said, "I have just seen the Jewish God." The Chafetz Chaim passed away in 1933 at the age of 95, greatly mourned by all Jews. This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen, wishing you a happy and healthy Shabbos.
Now, from the Israel National Radio newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Hamas says the pressure is on Israel and Egypt ahead of the visit to Israel this coming week by Egyptian intelligence chief Omar Suleiman for talks on Cairo's efforts to achieve a ceasefire between Israel and Arab terror groups. Suleiman is scheduled to brief government officials on his efforts to achieve a temporary truce, first in Gaza and later in Judea and Samaria. Israel is expected to accept an Egyptian initiative recently accepted by 12 gangs in Hamas-controlled Gaza. Hamas leader Mahmoud Azahar warning that Israel will not enjoy stability and security unless it accepts the Egyptian initiative. He also says Hamas will not discuss kidnapped Army Corporal Gilad Shalit until Israel lifts its blockade on Gaza. The blockade, Israel's answer to missile attacks from Gaza on the western Negev, another rocket harmlessly falling in the western Negev on Friday morning. Quoting Azahar, "The lives of millions of Israelis will be at stake unless Israel accepts the Egyptian proposal and removes the blockade." Referring to Hamas's breach of the border at Rafah, Azahar saying, the Egyptians are very keen on achieving a truce because they are worried about their national security. They don't want a repetition of the events that happened along the border with the Gaza Strip earlier this year. An Egyptian diplomat quoted as saying, if Israel does not accept the proposal, the situation will deteriorate. The situation deteriorating in Lebanon, where the death toll hit double figures Friday and violence that erupted after the Beirut government fired Hezbollah's director of security at the capital's airport and announced a clampdown on the terror group's Beirut air communication system. The Shiite terrorists seizing Sunni neighborhoods in the western part of Beirut. The TV station of top Sunni politician Saad Hariri's Future Movement went off the air, and the offices of its affiliated Al-Mustaqbal newspaper on the edge of the city was set afire by opposition gunmen. Syria's President Bashar al-Assad has told the Italian L'Espresso Weekly that he has rejected Israel's demand that, in return for a peace deal, Syria cut its ties with terror organizations such as Hezbollah as well as with Iran, Assad calling Israel's demand useless and adding that he is waiting for the new United States president to enter office so that the process can be renewed. His statement seemingly runs contrary to reports from Turkey that a Syrian-Israeli breakthrough is imminent. Ahead of outgoing President George Bush's visit to the region this week, PLO officials claiming that Prime Minister Ehud Olmert was misleading the public when he talked about significant progress following his meeting with PLO Chairman Mahmoud Abbas this past week. Abbas due to meet Bush in Egypt at the end of the trip. PLO officials expressing fear that Olmert will embark on a massive military operation in Gaza in a bid to divert attention from the police inquiry against him on allegations of bribery and accepting illegal campaign contributions. Senior negotiator Saeb Arakat saying that the PLO was following the developments surrounding the police probe very closely, although the PLO considers it an internal Israeli affair. Quoting Arakat, any peace agreement will be postponed if new elections are held in Israel. If Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni takes over, we will continue to negotiate with her. Quoting Livni in an Independence Day speech to diplomats at the President's house in Jerusalem, it's possible to fail to achieve peace or to achieve a failed peace. The price of either is high. Livni is saying that a successful peace must protect Israel's fundamental interests. Quoting once again, security is not just an empty concept and peace is not just a piece of paper. Livni calling on the international community to respect Israel's need to avoid a failed peace deal. Quoting once again, I turn to the world today and say, respect our intention to make peace in the proper way. Peace that will not be another stage in the conflict, but will last for generations to come. Her remarks against the backdrop of talks she has started negotiating the ceding of parts of Jerusalem to the PLO, including parts of the Temple Mount and the Old City. More partying ahead as Israel reaches its 60th birthday on the civil calendar on May 15th. When Israel was established, the declaration of the state was moved up by a few hours to avoid the desecration of the Sabbath, a similar story this year when the Hebrew anniversary of the 5th of Iyar fell on Shabbat and the observances were moved up 2 days to Thursday. A number of shows on the occasion are available on demand at IsraelNationalRadio.com. As for the weather, after Friday's drop in temperatures, a rise in temperatures Shabbat through Monday. In Jerusalem and the Golan Heights on Friday, 18 degrees centigrade, 64 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea, 29 degrees centigrade, 84 Fahrenheit. The Dead Sea, 28 degrees centigrade, 82 Fahrenheit. Be'er Sheva, 24 degrees centigrade, 75 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
That was a look at Jerusalem weather. And now, for your local weather, here's meteorologist Glenn Foxon.
Low pressure has moved eastward, and a weak high pressure system will cross the region on Shabbos, bringing dry weather. The next system will move from the mid-Mississippi Valley eastward to the mid-Atlantic region Sunday and Monday, which will bring back the chance of showers to Pittsburgh. The official Jewish Experience radio program weather forecast for Pittsburgh and vicinity. Friday night, mostly cloudy, low near 45. Shabbos day, partly sunny and mild, high 65 to 70. Motzi Shabbos, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, lows again near 45. On Sunday, mostly cloudy with a 50-50 chance of showers, highs near 70 degrees. Sunday night, cloudy with a continued chance of showers, low near 50. And the outlook for Monday, mostly cloudy and cooler with again the chance of showers, high near 60. This has been meteorologist Glenn Foxon wishing everyone good weather and great times this Shabbos.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
As we count down the Omer, we count up the Simchas. Here with the Mazel Tovs is Leva DeLin.
Thanks. There's two special Mazel Tovs that I'd like to say. For Dina Michal Edelman on a Bas Mitzvah, it was lovely. And on Katya Sheftel, Bas Mitzvah, it was also lovely. it was together, and your parties and Kiddush were absolutely exquisite. Your speeches were amazing, and we just had so much fun. Thank you so much. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Rabbi and Mrs. Levi Linger on a birth of a girl. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Mrs. Gloria Muscat on a birth of a grandson. There's so many more simchas going around. Please let us know.
And take a look at events around the community. Tuesday, May 13th, Deborah Fidel from the Pittsburgh Zionist Organization of America is going to debate Naftali Kaminsky of the Middle East Forum, Middle East Peace Forum, at Polyzedek on the subject Israel at 60. That's at 7:30 p.m., and you're going to hear more from Deborah Fidel in a few minutes on the JE. May 22nd at 5 p.m. will mark the grand opening of the Aleph Institute. The Aleph Institute provides religious and humanitarian support for tens of thousands of Jewish inmates and their families, as well as a wide range of reentry programs for the ex-inmates. There are over 80 volunteers who visit the prisons on a regular basis and 30 volunteers who visit the state hospitals and group homes as part of the Dorothy Friends program. In addition, there are over 300 people a week who benefit from the many supportive services being offered at the new Aleph Center. And for girls K through 8, Shira Day Camp, any level of observance accepted, 5-week session, June 30th to August 1st. Program includes sports, arts and crafts, baking, outdoor swimming, activities, and lots of fun. For more information, a free SDC water bottle, call Kollel Jewish Learning Center at 412-420-0220. And don't forget, they're still accepting registrations from Camp Gan Israel. I thought that was closed out, but they're still doing that. And that's another incredible camp for boys and girls. Goes through the summer, two different sessions. Call Rabbi Shmuley Rothman for more information on that, 412-422-7300. The meeting of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous meets at the Pittsburgh Kollel every Sunday evening from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Program is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating or their weight. Program is not for women only. Men are invited. For more information, call Ilana at 412-422-2224. And don't forget, you want to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can do it by calling 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Wednesday for that week's program. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week, 8:06 p.m. Up next, Israel at 60. Find out what's ahead. Deborah Fidel on the Jewish Experience right after this. Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you've worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. With Israel turning 60 coming up on Wednesday of next week, May 14th, we want to welcome to the microphones Deborah Fidel to the Jewish Experience, who is the president of the ZOA Pittsburgh District, also a local attorney, and very busy working with ZOA as a spokesman in this area. Deborah, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And before we begin, let's talk a little bit. Most people have some idea of what ZOA does and what it is, but give us a little background. How did ZOA get started? What it's all about? Why should people be involved with ZOA?
ZOA was founded in 1897, before, obviously, there was even a state. And the function, really, of the organization at that time was to press for the creation of the state. Once the State of Israel was created, it kind of morphed from an activist group into more of a social type of group. There were dances, there were Purim parties, and it was really the address for American Jewry who were Zionists to get together and share interests, but it was more of a cultural, social kind of organization.
Mm-hmm.
That all changed really around 1993 during the time of the Oslo Accords, because all of a sudden then, for the first time really in American Jewish history, you had a real split within the American Jewish community over whether or not to support the government of Israel and what it was doing. And it presented a real problem for people who didn't think that Oslo was a good idea. They were torn.
Sure.
And the ZOA's attitude then, as it was again during the disengagement from Gaza, and as it was at Annapolis and continues to be, is that we will continue to speak out when we see something that we think is destructive to Israel's long-term health, in the way that a friend would speak out if they saw someone dear to them standing on a ledge about to jump off a building. You
okay.
know, that it is absolutely our right, our responsibility, and our duty as friends of Israel to voice our concerns and buck the government when we think that she is doing something irresponsible.
So speaking of irresponsible, very quickly, Oslo Accords, good, bad?
Oslo Accords were a disaster. They were an unmitigated disaster. Rabin kept hoping with each concession that somehow he would win over his opponents, and with each concession they just saw more and more weakness, and the calls for Israel's destruction grew louder and louder and louder until we have what we have now. It wasn't good for us or them. At that time, their economy was growing. Now it's in the toilet. At that time, there was virtually no terrorism. Now we're in a situation where you can't get through a workday in Sderot or even Ashkelon without it being interrupted by a qassam falling in the near vicinity.
Well, and I would also add that they had the highest standard of living in the Middle East besides for Egypt before all this hit. And I would also maintain that these people were kept on these settlements and so forth and almost created a weapon out of them by the Arabs instead of, you know, welcoming them into their countries and absorbing them like the Jews have done to the Jews around the world. They forced them into these places, wouldn't let them in, and basically created this hate and resentment. And I mean, they weaponized these people, which is kind of sad. But
well, you know, it's a really interesting fact that very few people are aware of. In the 70s, Israel built permanent housing for the so-called refugees of Gaza with running water and modern sewage and electricity and paved roads and sidewalks, and it was lovely. And I have seen the housing. And they encouraged the Palestinian people to move into these housing projects. And not only did they refuse to do so, because by doing so they would be giving up their beloved right of return, but the Arab leaders and the Arab League forbade them from doing so,
exactly.
And the UN passed resolution after resolution condemning Israel for trying to resettle them and upgrade their standard of living. So we can't win.
Right. That's right. All right. So let's talk a little bit. You got this debate coming up Tuesday, the day before Israel's 60th, and you're going to be debating Naftali Kaminsky, who's the Middle East Peace Forum representative. And during this debate, I assume you're going to be talking about some of the things that have gone on and where Israel is right now. Is the government doing anything right at this point? It seems like at every turn that they do, they seem to be doing something that causes more anguish here. And it also seems that the United States, by sticking its big toe in here all the time, is actually causing more hate and discontent as well. Is that kind of the way ZOA sees it?
Absolutely. I would say that this continuing attempt to have negotiations and discussions and peace conferences is really just a continuation of that Oslo mindset, which the big mistake at that time was when Rabin saw, well, let me back up. They shook hands. They signed the agreement. The whole world went gaga. Yasser Arafat won his Nobel Peace Prize. And immediately he was on Arab TV within the same week saying, don't worry, it was really a Trojan horse. This is all part of the strategy. We didn't really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, Rabin should have stopped the negotiations. He should have said, uh-uh, it's not going to work. You're not upholding your agreement. You didn't speak about peace publicly in Arabic, and you're not following through on your agreements. We're not going to follow through on ours. But we did, and we had one-sided concessions. And that has been the mindset that has followed us until today and until the extreme example of the disengagement of Gaza. And right now, we see where the Palestinian Authority has violated not only Oslo, but the roadmap to peace that they keep touting as the Holy Grail over and over and over again with their constant and unabated incitement to terror and murder in their media, in their mosques, in their schools, in their summer camps. It is absolutely embarrassing that the United States government, that Condoleezza Rice, that Prime Minister Olmert don't have the backbone to call Mahmoud Abbas what he is, which is a terror-loving terrorist, the Holocaust-denying Munich massacre financing terrorist.
You got that right.
And they don't, for their own internal political reasons, call a spade a spade.
Now, we had Noam Bedin from the Sderot Media Center on the program here not too long ago. And one of the things he said, which I just was emblazoned in my memory, is that, because I asked him, why are we doing all this? Why are we doing things that are so self-defeating? And he said, in 1945, we knew who we were and we knew who our enemies are. Yeah. He says, today we don't know who we are and we don't know who our enemies are. Now, he also said that he thought that Israel began as a negative. In other words, the Holocaust and a place that people need a place to go, so they went. Because of that, they have this guilt. Do you see that at all as being part of this reason for this kind of behavior?
Well, you know what? I'm a lawyer, and before I came to this job, my past life, before I started having children, I was an assistant district attorney, and I specialized in domestic abuse cases. And to be honest, it reminds me, this constant desire to please our enemies reminds me a lot of the battered women that I used to see in my practice. It was the battered women syndrome was the term of art. Because the way of thinking is that we can't change the other guy, so therefore, if we can only change our behavior, we can make the hurt go away. If I stop burning the dinner and I keep the kids quiet, he won't beat me. If I only give up more of my land and give them police officers and guns to put in the hands of those police officers and let their terrorists out of jail, maybe they'll decide that they like me and the terrorists won't actually take the guns and come shoot me with them.
Sure.
It makes no sense.
Right, exactly. But it makes sense to them for some reason at some level. And with that, I just wanted to mention that what we have heard is that Ehud Olmert, who's got his own problems right now, is in a situation where he believes that if he doesn't have a two-state solution, the demographics of Israel will be such that the Palestinians will overtake, the so-called Palestinians will overtake the Jews and therefore vote everybody out, and the Jewish state will cease to exist. And this is what he's afraid of, and that's why he's pushing for a two-state solution. Any comment on the demographics? Anything that you know about that?
Well, I would say about the demographics that for now that we're out of Gaza, Jews are 67% of the land west of the Jordan River. We are in a clear, firm majority.
Mm-hmm.
To the west of the Jordan River.
That's
so
good.
Our population is growing. The Arab population in Judea and Samaria is actually shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
They are emigrating at greater numbers than we are immigrating. But, I mean, there are Jews. There's a net plus to the Jewish population and a net minus to the Arab population. So as far as demographics go, I don't see it as an immediate threat. However, a two-state solution is basically an invitation to a one-state solution, and it won't be a Jewish state. There is no reason on God's green earth for anybody at this point to be talking about a two-state solution. There is no reason to think.
Well, there's nobody to negotiate with.
Pardon me?
There's nobody to negotiate with.
There's nobody to negotiate with, but it's ridiculous to think that if you take a bunch of terrorists and tell them that they have a state, that they're going to decide to make that a democratic, peace-loving state.
Right.
North Korea is a state. Iran is a state. Syria is a state. That doesn't mean that they're democratic, peace-loving states. They're terrorist rogue states. Do we really need another terrorist state in that part of the world? Whose ends will that serve?
Exactly. So let's talk about the U.S. involvement here for a second. Condoleezza Rice has been calling for, I guess, to help the Palestinians, calling for a removal of checkpoints because they're annoying, I guess. They're a real problem. And we have had, and one of the reasons that we think everybody's listening to her is because Israel is a debtor state to the United States. We've had Shmuel Sakin on the program from Manigat Yehudit. He called for the elimination of any U.S. aid to Israel, and he said that Israel could stand on its own two feet. It would be better served that way and wouldn't have to listen to this. So two-part question here. Number one, what about these checkpoints? Is it safe to remove them? And if not, what should Israel tell to Rice? And number two, can Israel exist, in your opinion, if you know, without the U.S. pumping money into it?
Well, let me talk about the first part of your question. There were no checkpoints before Oslo.
Uh-huh.
So think about what that means. Since we started making all these unilateral one-sided concessions, then the terror increased, and now we need checkpoints. When the terror goes away, we won't need checkpoints anymore. To take them away before the terror stops is like saying to your young child, if you stop hitting your brother, I'll take you to this toy store, but no, you know what? I'm going to take you to the toy store first in the hopes that you're going to stop hitting your brother.
Yep.
It's the opposite backwards way of handling this. Every checkpoint is there for a reason, and that's to save Jewish lives. And every checkpoint that's taken down against the advice of Israel's generals is only increasing the threat of terror within Israel, and to do it just to please Condoleezza Rice is a mentality that certainly we don't think that the Israelis in this day and age need to have anymore.
So what should they say to the United States?
Well, you know what? We can stand up for ourselves sometimes. I don't. That's a tough question. I wouldn't specifically say that we should fuck the administration, but when it goes against our own interests, I don't think that it's a hard stretch to make the case. You can show statistically how many attacks are thwarted by each checkpoint. These things do get reported. It's in the newspaper, and we know that checkpoints save lives.
Sure.
So better yet, but the question is, first Abbas should see to arresting all the Palestinian terrorists running around his territories and these militia groups who are armed to the teeth with illegal weaponry.
Right.
Take them off the streets, then we'll talk about removing checkpoints.
Good.
You know, but he has the opposite. Not only does he not arrest the terrorists that are there now, but he is actually calling for Israel to release all the Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, even the ones with blood on their hands, and the ones that don't have blood on their hands, mind you, not for lack of trying. You know, that's a silly argument that the Israeli government makes sometimes, but if he were really the peace-loving moderate that he paints himself as and that our government and our media calls him, then would he really be calling to have all these killers and murderers and terrorists roaming the streets? You would think he would want them behind bars to help him maintain peaceful relations, but that's not his real goal.
Absolutely not. We are running out of time, so one last quick thing. Iran developing a nuclear reactor. How far is Israel going to let it go? If you don't know, it's okay.
I can't say for sure, but from my reading and I just heard a very interesting lecture last week from somebody who does have an inside track to things, and he predicted that this summer, when all the dignitaries leave Israel, the celebrations are going to go through May and June, but he predicted that it's going to be a very hot summer.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we hope Israel will be able to take care of itself, and I'm sure we will with God's help. And with this debate Tuesday, it sounds like it's going to be some real interesting fireworks and something exciting. And everybody listening should make plans to attend at Pole Zedek Tuesday, May 13th. What time?
7:30.
Debate between Deborah Fidel and Naftali Kaminsky. Make sure you're there. Deborah, thank you very much for being with us. And how can people find out more about the Pittsburgh ZOA?
Well, the easiest place is to look us up on the web. ZOA.org is the main organization webpage. Go to the chapters tab, pull down to Pittsburgh District website, and we're right there. Our phone number is 412-665-4630, and my email is Pittsburgh, not abbreviated, at ZOA.org. That is, if it's still working, because after all the hate mail I got today in response to the article that I had printed in the Post-Gazette about not negotiating with Hamas and Carter's foolishness and trying to meddle in the Middle East, I've attracted quite a bit of traffic.
Okay, good. Well, people should, if they haven't read that article, they should look it up. Deborah Fidel, thank you very much for being with us. Deborah Fidel, president of ZOA Pittsburgh District, here on the JE. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Bye-bye.
Nikakala, Ananaina Pinishaba, Chabat Nikabila, Ananaina Lehadodi, Ananaina Likakala, Ananaina Pinishaba, Chabat Nikabila.
Take a look at the feminine side of things with the feminine perspective. Here's Miss Devorah DeLynn.
During one of my many info-gathering forays on the internet, I came across an intriguing article from Chabad.org about a woman who chose to homeschool her child instead of sending him to a traditional brick-and-mortar school. It was her closing remark that really struck me. She said that through homeschooling, her son was truly living the words of the Shema, which say that the Torah learning should be taking place all the time, in the street, in the house, when you sleep, when you get up. Homeschooling effectively breaks the boundaries that a traditional school can place upon education. The common belief that a child shouldn't be pushed to learn during after-school hours due to fatigue is a perfect example, but quite contradictory to true Torah values. Instead of making a separation between studies and home life, they should be, in essence, one and the same, totally, if subtly, connected. In this week's Torah portion, Parashas Emor, we learn about the laws of purity that a priest must maintain, specifically pertaining to a mace, the body of a departed soul. Except in specific cases, a Kohen is not allowed to come near a cemetery or a mace. He may only say Kaddish for 7 types of family members. The Talmud Yerushalmi states, however, that on the day of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's passing, his colleague, Rabbi Yanai, proclaimed that today there is no priesthood, effectively allowing the priests of the time to take part in the burial of Rebbe. In fact, it was the Kohanim themselves who actually buried him. But how could this be? The Zohar says that after a soul leaves the body, it remains hovering for 11 months until it enters judgment. At this time, certain impure spirits seeking access into Shamayim inhabit the body, and that is the reason that priests are forbidden to take part in the burial. In Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's case, however, the body remained totally pure. Rabbi Yehuda was fondly referred to simply as Rebbe, teacher, because he is the epitome of a teacher. The Gemara says that he taught Torah to the entire world. After his passing, people continued to repeat, discuss, learn his teachings. It was as if his very lips spoke from the grave. And because his body was so involved with Torah, even after his passing, the spirits of impurity had no power whatsoever over his body, and he retained the level of holiness he had during his life. This is the level of love of learning. This is true teaching. Whether at home, professionally, or even being an example to others, Torah, our life of privilege, is the only thing keeping us going. The Pasuk says, Emor el HaKohanim, say to the priests. King Solomon comments on this verse with the Pasuk, Sfasayim Yishak, Meshi Devarim Nechochim, the lips of one who returns a true answer shall be kissed. This verse teaches us that a righteous man who occupies himself with Torah study, the true and only answer to living life, merits having his soul taken away through Hashem himself. May the holy neshamos of those departed, taken away from us out of Hashem's kindness and love, experience aliyah after aliyah, culminating in the Tzachiyas HaMeisim with Mashiach Tzidkenu. Have a good Shabbos, and may we merit experiencing only simchas.
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
A great Torah sage from Russia made the decision to travel to Israel to spend the last years of his life. This great sage had the custom, as many do, to recite the Shir HaShirim every Friday afternoon before Shabbos. Shir HaShirim is the Song of Songs, written by none other than King Solomon. Whenever this sage would reach the following verse, tears would stream from his eyes. The verse, my people are beloved. Their eyes are compared to the eyes of doves. Reb Aryeh Levin, who was known as the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, after witnessing this week after week, finally went over to this sage and asked him for an explanation. The sage explained the following. When I was a rabbi in Russia, one day a man came to my house. He told me that he had a very urgent matter to discuss with me. In the privacy of my living room, he told me that even though he was Jewish, he does not fulfill anything in the Torah. In fact, no one in the city even knows that he is Jewish. He has many business dealings with the Russian government, and they must never know that he is Jewish, or else his business would come to an end. Even more, he would suffer severely for not having made known his true identity. He went on to say that a few days ago his wife gave birth to a baby boy. He asked me if I would perform the bris on the eighth day. I very happily agreed. But then I asked him the following question. You yourself admit that you do not fulfill anything in the Torah. Why then would you be willing to take a chance and give your child a bris? At this point, the man put his head down and began crying. Finally, he calmed himself and said, "When I grew up, at least I was able to see Yiddishkeit in my house. I saw Shabbos. I saw keeping kosher. My son will even be robbed from this experience. It is most important to me that he has a bris, so that one day, somewhere, he will realize that he is Jewish, and it is possible that he will come back to his people." The sage then explained, "This is the meaning of the verse. Their eyes are like the eyes of doves. A dove, even though it flies far away from the nest, it is always looking back. It is focusing on its home. So too, as can be seen from this story, even though a Jew may stray far, far away, very deep in the inner recesses of his soul, Yiddishkeit is very much alive and will one day again flourish." This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
Close out another Sefirat HaOmer edition of the Jewish Experience radio program. A couple of reminders. Tuesday, May 13th, coming up, Deborah Feindel from the Pittsburgh ZOA district is going to debate Naftali Kaminsky of the Middle East Peace Forum at Polyzetic on the subject Israel at 60. Don't miss that, 7:30 p.m. May 22nd, 5 p.m., Aleph Institute grand opening. You want to be there for that. Girls K through 8, Shira Day Camp, 412-420-0220. And for boys and girls, Camp Gone Israel, 412-422-7300. The Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, Pittsburgh Colo, 5808 Beacon Street, meets every Sunday evening from 7:30 to 9. Program is a recovery group, and you want to call Ilan at 412-422-2224. Don't forget to give us a call if you have mazel tovs or events you'd like to have everybody know about, 412-979-5770, or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And as we come to the close and wrap it up, we'd like to thank Deborah Feindel, president of ZOA Pittsburgh District, for her very insightful comments on the future of the state of Israel and how they should handle things with the Arabs living next door. And, of course, our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Rabbi Moshe Pikar on the keyboard there, Dr. Michael Shulman, Ms. Devorah DeLynn, Ms. Leva DeLynn for the Mazel Tovs, and our engineer, Jeremy LeBostenstein, once again for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time tonight, 8.06 p.m. It's been a ton of fun. Do have to run. Don't forget, Jewish Radio is here for you. Will you be here for Jewish Radio? Pledge your support today at jewishexperience@verizon.net. I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll see you all next week or on the web at jewishexperienceradio.com anytime. And back here Friday, same Yiddish time, same Yiddish channel. See you then.